What's up, everybody? Thanks for listening to the BTOSports.com podcast show. BTOSports.com has teamed up with us to offer you a great deal on your next moto-related purchase. It's easy. Fill up your shopping cart with at least $100 of merchandise and type M-A-T-T-H-E-S in the coupon section during checkout and you are hooked up. One more thing, folks. If you're looking for more Mathis, you're in luck. He's easy to find. Just bookmark PulpMX.com and follow Mathis on Twitter at Twitter.com/PulpMX.
Responsible if it does. What are you gonna do about it anyway? You won't have a head. You have been warned.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross, hosted by Steve Mathis.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com Transworld Motocross Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Steve Mathis, and with me on the line is the child prodigy, one of the youngest winners to ever win an AMA National, and that would be Robbie Renard. RR, what's going on?
Not too much, just hanging out.
Are you still the youngest guy to win, or did Stewart break that?
No, I'm actually still the youngest guy to win an outdoor race, so...
Yeah, okay, all right. I wasn't sure if Stewart got that or not. If not, it's you're right there anyways. Well, thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it. I don't really know you all that well, but always a guy I've wanted to talk to and certainly got a number of requests from fans to do this with you, so I appreciate you taking the time to do it. What's Robbie Renard up to these days?
Well, right now, like I'm actually purchased a track in like December and been working on that and holding some races there and practices and getting it all set up for me to be able to train kids and do motocross schools and stuff like that out there.
What track is it called? What's the name of it?
It's called Raynard Raceway.
Okay.
I have a website, RaynardRaceway.com.
Oh, sweet. Okay. You're day-to-day, you're working on the track, managing it, doing riding schools, training. Sounds like a full-time gig.
Yeah, it actually is. But, you know, I love motocross, and that's why, I decided to stay in it and keep doing this. And, you know, obviously I could think of a lot of things I would rather rather doing this than something else. So.
Yeah. So what's that like for you as a – first of all, are you retired? Are your racing days over? Do we know this?
Nah, you know, I'm still on a race some. I just it'd be a little less than what I, you know, used to. I still plan on probably going and doing some rear crosses this next year. And,
oh, okay. All right.
I'm going to hit some, Tennessee this year, like ride the old man's class. You know,
oh, are you? You're going to do like, that is? Yeah.
Yeah, I like to go race, so.
Right. Okay, so you're not retired. How many titles you got at Loretta's?
I'm not really sure, actually.
I was going to say, because you could hold on and maybe break, like, Alessi's record. I think Alessi's got the all-time at 11 or 13.
Yeah.
Maybe you can just rack up a bunch of victories in the plus 30, plus 40 classes as you go on.
Yeah, exactly. I think I have to run – I don't think the over 30 class is AB, so I think you have to I have to run over 25, and I think over four, or the as I'm in the 450 pro class, I think.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, when you're teaching these kids, like, don't take this the wrong way, but you're so naturally talented on a motorcycle. Do you know what you're doing on the motorcycle. Do you know what I mean? Like, you always struck me as a kid that a guy can just ride a bike. You were just made for it. So how much of it is natural talent, and how much do you have to work at it and learn?
Well, you know, actually, believe it or not, I actually worked pretty hard. I love the training part of it and everything. The riding part, I did come natural to me because, mm-hmm. like,
yeah.
But growing up, like, from when I was 3 years old till, I rode almost every day. So it should come natural to you if you ride every day and
yeah.
5 gallons of gas a day, you know?
Yeah.
So I just rode a lot when I was growing up. And, now that, I'm teaching, I do pay attention a lot more, what I do on the track and stuff like that to be able to relay it to them and to be able to help them out, in that direction.
Right.
So.
Yeah, because, I mean, the stories about, you whooping up on Pastrana and Wyndham and, like, just your natural talent stories have always been there. You know what I mean? So that's all.
Yeah.
I didn't know. So a lot of guys that have so much talent like you maybe don't know how they're doing it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like.
Yeah, no, I understand. Like, I completely understand. And, it's a good point because, honestly, before I started actually working with people, I could probably explain some things, but I didn't really dissect it down to, exactly
right.
how to do it.
Right.
So
what kind of track is Renard Raceway? What's it like? Is it a super grassy, natural?
No, it's more natural. I'm actually having a guy come out this next week and relay it out and kind of just build a whole new track so it kind of gets ready for the summer because mm-hmm. this summer I'll be, having kids stay out there. There's 4,000 square foot with like 7 bedrooms, living quarters on it. So, I can be able to have kids stay there and stuff like that. So we can have week long training sessions and make it where it's, there's 160 acres out there also. So there's plenty of stuff for us to do.
Oh, wow. It's like a modern day Cooperland or something, huh?
Yeah. I think it's going to be in, I actually looked at buying Cooperland, but I just felt like this mm-hmm. place had a lot more opportunities.
Right.
So,
basically, and also too, are you engaged to Ashley Phillips, or are you just boyfriend girlfriend?
Nah, just boyfriend okay. girlfriend.
So you your girlfriend is one of the floor announcers for Supercross, so you obviously have your finger still on that. And what's your take on the 2010 season and what just went down?
I'm really pumped for Dungey. I'm glad to see him go out there and do well. He's a good kid, a good-hearted kid. And, I always much rather see a kid like him, Trey Kennard, or somebody like that, has a good heart and loves it and, just is devoted to the sport, and that's always great to see.
Right. And are you a little bit bummed, like everybody, that Villopoto got hurt? Because I think we were coming down to a great title chase.
Yeah, it's always nice to be able to see the last, round where they're competing and trying to go for the championship, just like last year with mm-hmm. Reed and Stewart. That was a pretty exciting race last year.
Right.
And anytime you can see exciting race, it's definitely a way to go.
And with you now being semi-retired, Ashley is the more famous of the two of you. So do you get a lot of this is my boyfriend? He used to ride.
Yeah, I love that she's involved with it. She helps me a lot during the summer
mm-hmm.
With the kids and training and all that stuff. And she actually rides a little bit, and I got her into riding. And
cool.
She's awesome. She does a great job at what she does. And I kind of wish, I was still doing Supercross because then I'd be traveling with her, but.
Yeah, really, huh?
Yeah.
Do you work much with, do you know Trey Kennard at all? Do you have you ever had much interaction with him?
Actually, I know Trey really well. He only lives like 20 miles from me.
All right.
And he's actually about exactly 20 miles from the racetrack that I bought. So, I haven't ever, I give him suggestions and stuff, but Shannon Nyday is actually who helps him out.
Mm-hmm.
Trey's a great kid, and Yeah, I definitely see him going far. Like when I saw him when he was just 16, how he had everything already planned out and already lined out. You know, I knew at that time he was going to do whatever it took, you know, to succeed.
Right.
And that's pretty amazing to see at a 16-year-old.
The reason I asked was because I did one of these with him, and he stated that you were one of his heroes growing up. And I thought to myself, two things. First, I'm really old because I remember when you were a kid. And so, and now I'm interviewing a kid who says Robbie Renard was his hero. But he said you were his hero, and I just wanted to know if you knew him that well, because I don't remember asking him if he actually knew you. He just said that you were one of his heroes growing up.
Yeah, we do. We hang out quite a bit. I go ride out there with him and stuff. So,
I know one of your buddies is Pastrana. Do you still stay in touch with him?
Yeah, quite a bit. We hit and miss, you know. I'm not a crazy person to go do all this crazy stunts. So I don't do any of that stuff. But
Has he tried to get you to do, come on over and do a backflip or something?
A long time ago, but I think he realized that because when he was his first year pro, he pretty much stayed with me and we rode and trained together pretty much the whole season. And he kind of knew from that point. I'm not one of those. I'm more of a mellow person.
What was the craziest thing you've seen him do all those times he stayed with you and rode with you?
That's the thing. Like when he comes here, like he kind of uses it for like his serious mode because it was always kind of serious here, and you know we didn't mess around. You know, we kind of stuck to the business. And so he always kind of used that to come here and train or whatever.
Right. I've been trying to do one of these with him and talk about trying to track a guy down. Good God.
Exactly. Sometimes you get his phone, best bet to text him and, you know, maybe he'll come across it.
No, that guy, I can't imagine that guy's life. Who were your heroes growing up when you were coming up? Who were the guys you looked up to?
Definitely be Guy Cooper, you know.
Cooper, yeah.
Guy Cooper was, I thought Guy Cooper was the awesomest, you know, the coolest guy.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you probably got to race with him at one point, right?
I did. Yeah, for sure. Not in Supercross or anything, just local races. I never actually raced him in any kind of professional races.
Was he done by 93? 94?
I guess. Yeah, he was on big bikes, I believe. You know what? I did race him that year that he came back for the.
The KTM.
I guess I did race him then. So.
Everybody had to race him when he pulled the hole shot every weekend. That's funny. Hey, you were one of the first guys that I remember really being hyped as an amateur. You know, before that, the guys come in and they struggled a bit at pros. And, you know, nowadays we know, you know, Adam C. and Cirillo and these kids, when they're 10 years old, everybody's already projected them. But you were the first guy to have, you know, you had full page Fox ads when you were an amateur. And it was like, look out, Renard is coming. You know what I mean? Like really hyped as an amateur. And I remember reading this in the magazine. You went to Acapulco Supercross and you like, did you beat Jeff Matasevich?
No, like we battled.
Okay.
But he ended up beating me.
All right, but he was the shit back then, and you were just a kid. You were 15 or whatever.
Yeah, I was 15.
What do you remember about that? Was it pretty amazing?
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Obviously, racing against him. But, you know, the thing is, like, when I was at that age, you know, I think that's what you have to be in the sport if you want to make it. You know, you can't think that anybody can beat you. You know, everybody is the same. But, you know, I just went out there and raced and did the best I could. And, you know, we battled it up. And it was the track was awesome. It was just like a fun, whooped-out outdoor sand track pretty much. So, yeah, it was a blast.
So that would have been, would that have been 92?
Yep.
Yeah. So 93, yeah. you turn 16. Do you race pro the whole season in 93? I can't remember.
No. I started in May.
Yeah.
like just a couple days after I turned 16.
Okay, and you won Steel City that year. That was what we were talking about, being the youngest one. What do you What do you remember from the first few races as a pro? What were your thoughts on that?
I remember Steel City very well because that triple step up. I think I tried it three times in practice and crashed three times in a row. And, you know, so I remember that very well, you know, and I don't remember exactly what place I ended up, but, you know, I was very young and dumb, and I kept jumping that stupid thing and landing on my head and just kept doing it.
Are you talking about Gainesville?
Mount Morris.
Oh, Mount Morris. Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. So, yeah, that was the day before four strokes, when now they can sit at the bottom of the hill and clear it. But that was a day when you clearing it meant something. Well, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
And how were your national finishes? Obviously, you won Steel City, but how were they generally speaking when you turned 16?
You know, my first one, I want to say I got a fifth or seventh, somewhere around there. And then I actually went to. Like, back then, it had a break, and it went back to Supercross for two rounds. And I went to San Francisco, I think it was. And I was running third and broke my wrist on the last lap of a triple. Didn't even come up short, or just came up a little bit short and didn't crash, just snapped the wrist. So that was like the start of my injuries.
Oh yeah, no, I know we're gonna get to that for sure. So that was it for the rest of the season. When did you come back? Was it before Steel City or was it?
Before Steel City, I actually came back at Troy, Ohio.
Okay,
and I rode there, and like I actually got. Pretty much, obviously, that was probably the first time I got a rude awakening on how hot outdoors were.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously probably not being, you know, riding shape because I was probably riding for a week before I went racing again.
Yeah.
So, and that's one thing, you know, I wish, you know, I would have had somebody to hold me back a little bit on my injuries to let them heal up. You know, because I was, you know, as soon as I could get on a bike, I was ready to go racing.
Yeah, like not a lot of rehab, not a lot of strengthening, the area.
Yeah, there was none of that. It was just on the bike, oh, let's go race.
Right.
You know.
Times have changed now. Like Robbie Renard in 2010 has a trainer, has a doctor, has a riding coach. You know what I mean? Like, has all these people around him.
It's awesome. It's perfect. You know, I think it's going to make the riders and their career, you know, go longer because, you know, I think that's one thing that held me back right now, you know, because a lot of my stuff is still kind of beat up.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So. What do you remember then about the historic Steel City National and winning it?
Well, I started off the day with a bee sting to the forearm.
Okay.
And, from that, you know, the first moto, like, I could hardly hang on with that arm, and I ended up, like, a sixth, and then the second moto, I hole-shot it and led the whole moto, and, you know, I think Henry and, I want to say it was Henry and Rhino might have, like, had problems or something, or Emick, I don't remember, actually, it was one of them three. Had some problems, and so it just kind of flip-flopped, and I ended up with the overall for the day. So
yeah, and so you didn't know you won the overall when you crossed the finish line.
Not at all.
Yeah, you had to wait for the math to be done, but still, even winning a moto at that age was amazing. You know, like had to been something pretty special.
Yeah, it definitely was. You know, and you know, the thing was like, you know, it was actually hard for me to deal with being beat because, like, all growing up through amateurs, like, I, like, you know, very seldom got beat. You know, I won so much. And I think that's something that's probably a little bit hard to sometimes deal with some of these riders that come up through the amateur ranks and they're winning everything. They go pro, you know, to learn to build a not ride over the head and take those out of, you know, being a little smarter sometimes, you know, and knowing to back it down a little bit. So,
yeah, you had probably been beat when you turned pro under 10 times in your life.
Yeah, it's not a whole lot. So,
were you factory Cali in 93, or were you like a support guy?
I was a support guy, but I had already signed with Cali for the following year.
Oh, okay. So you had so what was the difference, like, in 94, 95, when you were factory Cali, what was the difference in your bikes and setup and all that? Was there much different, or was your dad still doing your motors and stuff?
Well actually, he was just being the mechanic. Rick Ash, at that time, was doing the motors and stuff like that at Cali. So,
and what do you remember from those 2 years, the other next 2 years at Factory Cali? Injuries, a few results here and there. You won Delmont again. You won Steel City again the next year.
Yeah. Actually, I think actually at the end of I want to say it was 93. At the end of 93 is when I actually first had my first shoulder problem at Englishtown, New York, at that Kawasaki race.
Right.
And I fell over in a corner and dislocated my first shoulder, and that was ongoing thing for my shoulders.
Yeah. And so, that would have been what, the end of 94?
End of 93.
Oh, end of 93. Okay, so
yeah,
right away.
So yeah, it was right away, and I went, like, I took the time off and ended up going over to Paris and racing over there, and the thing just falling out of socket. So I went and had it fixed, and that one actually was pretty good. And the 94, I started having trouble with the left one.
Oh,
so. But, so it seemed like, pretty amazing.
it was one thing after another, huh? What is it about Steel City that, I mean, you won it again in 94. What is it about that place?
You know, Steel City, I don't really know. You know, every year I went there, like, at the beginning of the first moto, like, I always had to tell myself to back down a little bit because, like, I'd be riding and, you know, that track gets all these ruts, mm-hmm. and there's ruts going on straightaways and everything else. Like, I'd always have to tell myself to settle down and back down a little bit to ride smooth. And once I did that, I always seemed like I started going faster.
Right.
So, I think, you know, that in that idea, you know, I think my smooth riding style might have paid off for that kind of a track, just having all the ruts and stuff like that. And I always loved riding in ruts. So
it really wasn't the obstacles or the soil really or anything. It was like more of a mentality, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Hey, I heard a story, like, as I was starting to come around as a mechanic then, I heard Roy Turner was pretty hard on you. Was that true, or what can you say about that?
You know, I wouldn't say he was hard on me. You know, if anybody was hard on me, it would be myself. You know, mm-hmm. like I said before, like I didn't ever want to be beat, and so I think I was just more harder on myself than anything. And you know, instead of having the right guidance and, you know, the steps and stuff, you know, I just kind of went out there and just pushed maybe a little too hard and like I said before, and didn't give myself recovery time.
Right. And at the end of the Cali, when you were done at Kawasaki, you already were starting, like we said, you're already starting to get hurt a little bit. Did they not want to re-sign you? What do you remember from that, going to Primal Himbo's Honda? Did you just look for a better team, or how did that go down?
Actually, going to Primal, actually, I had my opportunity to go to Mitch and race there. But at that time, my father, they didn't want my father to be my mechanic at Mitch at Pro Circuit.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually ended up going to Primal Impulses so my father could be my mechanic.
Wow. So he felt that strongly about it, huh?
Yeah. Only, I was only, 17, 18 at the time,
Yeah.
And my father, you know, had been with me all the way till then. So, you know, it was, and obviously he's still with me, you know, I'm very close with him. And, So, you know, definitely had that kind of.
Was there conflicts at Cowie with, I mean, your dad's, for people who don't know, Robert Renard is a longtime motor builder in the area and built some pretty good stuff and did a lot of your bikes. Was there problems with Cowie and Robert wanting to work on the bike at all? I mean, did that anything go down like that?
No, not at all. Like, actually, you know, Rick Ash and my dad are still actually really good friends and talk, you know, whenever they see each other and stuff like that. So,
cool.
No, not at all. There's, you know,
I'm thinking,
didn't have any problem at all.
I'm wondering why Mitch wouldn't want him, you know what I mean? That's all. I'm just trying to think to myself, like, maybe Mitch was thinking that Robert was going to get in there or something. Who knows?
Nah, I think, you know, I think, honestly, I look back and I think sometimes father-son deals are better to be separated just because.
Yeah, you think?
just because of the, you know, you talk to your father differently. He talks to you differently. Instead of him being like your employer or your, you know, partner in the deal, you know, he's obviously going to still talk to you as your son. And always have that opinion instead of being, you know, if you come off the track and say, this is what I feel like it needs, instead of them just doing it, he has his opinion.
Right.
So, I think it would have been probably a smart move, but obviously at the time I did not. So,
looking back on it, though, maybe you would have took the PC ride?
Yes. Yeah, I very possibly would have.
But the same thing was, though, too, is Mitch wasn't the powerhouse back then that he was. I mean, he made good bikes and he had a good team, but your Primal Impulse Honda, you did well. I remember you you ran up front a bunch of Supercrosses, you know?
No, I definitely did. You know, we had, you know, I actually seen Kurt Clovis, the guy that did that team, actually San Antonio when I messed up my wrist. I actually saw him for the first time and probably... I don't even know, since probably 99, you know, I hadn't seen him forever. So it's been, well, for a long time. And it was kind of cool seeing him just recently. But, you know, we had an awesome team. We had good support from Honda. And then, you know, the first 2 years, I just, you know, obviously I just had too many injuries. And by the time I was I want to say it was 97. Wait, yeah, by time 97 came around, I've had so many injuries at this point. I was just kind of at that, like, almost shutdown point.
Right.
Like I just felt like I kept working, and I just kept getting hurt. And I was, like, kind of to the point where I almost, like, slowed down riding, quit training at all.
Yeah.
And it showed, like, when I went to the Rose Bowl. What race was that? The first Supercross that year,
in 98?
97.
Yeah, it was the Coliseum.
And Brian Deegan won.
Uh-huh.
You know, I led, like, majority of that race, and I was so out of shape, I couldn't even, you know.
I remember
couldn't
that.
Ride.
Yep.
And, you know... That season actually probably was a good thing for me because I started actually training again and stuff like that, and that's, I think, one of the reasons why I had such a good 98 season.
Right, right.
So
you realized that, hey, you need to, like, you took a year off of training almost to let your body heal. But you kept,
yeah, I don't know if I did it that way or if I was just that, you know, depressed because of all the... You know, if we go through the list, it's...
Let's go through them for fun. Let's go through the list, Robbie.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Now it's time to pay some bills.
Thanks for listening to the BTOsports.com podcast show. Please don't forget that BTO is the world leader in aftermarket motocross parts for the bike or body. You'll find deals like a Shoei VFXW helmet for $309.99, 45% off, or Smith Piston goggles for $32.99, 65% off. Your order can be shipped anywhere in the USA for free, or if you're not in the USA, we ship worldwide. Check it out at btosports.com.
Because I have that down. Let's talk.
My first shoulder, right shoulder, 93.
Mm-hmm.
My left shoulder in 94. and I had the shoulder problems going for quite some time.
Right.
And then I had both knees done.
Wait, your wrist in 93 ACL. Too. Your wrist in 93 too.
Oh yeah, my wrist in 93 also.
Right.
I had both ACLs done in 95.
You tore them, or they just beat up from years of racing?
Yeah, both ACLs were torn. Had them both repaired at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm. I'm writing this down, by the way.
Then I came back from that, and I, going into 96, that's when I broke the second vertebrae in my neck.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was coming back from that. Blew the ACL out of my right knee again.
How'd you break your neck, by the way? I don't remember that.
Lazy Arena Cross, the week before the first Supercross in 96.
Oh.
I was just racing and got a little out of shape in the whoops and kind of dove head first into the whoop.
Ah, jeez. Okay, so pick 97 ACL, right knee.
Actually, that was still in 96, my right ACL.
Oh, okay.
And then I kept having shoulder problems with my left one. Like, I had shoulder problems with my left one all the way up until 02. And I finally got it fixed by a good doctor. I've actually had four surgeries on it. In my right knee, I still have no ACL. I never got it fixed again. And those were, like, the ones that, like, at that point, that's what kind of shut me down.
Right.
For 97. Because I had that many in just that shorter period. And, honestly, I look back now and I'm like, how did I do it? You know, because I didn't, I just looked, I guess I feel like I was invisible, because
right.
I just get right back out there and race and not even think twice about it. Right. And I still today don't know how I actually did that, so.
Was part of the problem, because I was Ferry's mechanic for many years, so I understand the doctors and all that. Was part of the problem the doctors you were seeing, like, were they not fixing stuff right?
Looking no, back they on actually it? Were fixing stuff right. Yeah. They were doing everything right, but like on my ACLs,
mm-hmm.
I had them both done at the same time. I was riding my motorcycle in 6 weeks.
It seems a little quick.
Yeah, it was just, like I said, I just thought I was invisible and I could just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back now and I'm like, I had an ACL done in my left one again, just a couple years ago. And, it was like 6 months in and I'm like, how was I even thinking about riding at 6 weeks,
Right.
So...
Okay, so Primal Impulse, Honda, you had a pretty good season in 98, from what I remember off the top of my head. I think I was working in the 125 class then. But did you win Steel City again? I think you did.
I did.
Yeah.
I did win Steel City again.
You won Steel City, number 21 on a
Suzuki.
Yeah. Steel City, there it is again. Was that the year that you won Unadilla or you beat Ricky?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Talk about that race. That race is etched in a lot of people's memories. It's on message boards here and there. Like people, and I was there that day, and you just worked them. And what do you remember about that day?
It was obviously it was a good day. Me and my father actually were doing a bunch of testing at home, trying to get the bike figured out and stuff like that. And he actually was my mechanic at the time. Rob Walters was.
Wobbler.
And, so me and my father were trying to get it, get it a little better at the house, like trying to get everything, shock and motor dialed in. And it just seemed like everything clicked, at that point. Like we just had it spot on. And today, that 125 was awesome. It was probably the best 125 I ever rode. Just the power was so spread. It was just like electric machine. and I just think everything clicked, and I just, start was riding good, and the week before, I actually took off and, you know, relaxed, and I think everything together was just a good thing.
Yeah, because, you know, that's a fast track, too, and you were probably twice RC size, you know, on 125. Like, he was a pretty tiny guy, and yeah, man, you just worked him. But now, yeah. I was at the race. Lots of people talking about you cheating, though. Do you remember that? Was there ever a protest filed or anything like that? Because I brought it up to Wobbler a few times, and he almost punched me. He got so mad. But there was controversy a little bit there because no one had put it to RC like you did, you know?
Yeah. You know, I've heard that. And, you know, they actually – I want to say they actually did tear my bike down sooner or later through the year.
Mm-hmm.
But it obviously was 125. It just – like I said, it was – it got
people were just in shock that you just motored by Ricky Carmichael like that.
Yeah. You know, and like I said, that bike to till the day, it was awesome. You know, I almost wish I still had one just to play on.
And was your dad doing the motor? Your dad was doing the motor then too, huh?
Yep.
What is it about you? Like, I remember in 95, you were 10th, 8th in the points or something, 125 Nationals on a Cowie. And I went to Millville, and, dude, you spanked them. 1-1, like, it was hot out, and you worked them. 1-1, I believe. I'm pretty sure. And same thing with that Unadilla ride. You know, you were probably 5th or 6th in the points or something. You come out and you just beat Ricky. What is it about those days that you had that you could beat anybody who ever lived? Is there a common theme? Did you ever think about that?
No, there's not. Like, you know, the one before Millville, I can remember, we actually just moved out to the place where my parents live now.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I was just, like, the heat didn't bother me because I was out and it's just real treed out there. And I was out there with a shovel and an axe, like, cutting trails through the trees so I could ride and do motos through the trees.
Right.
So, like, I'd be out there just trimming trees and stuff, and I'd go out there and ride just motos, pretty much a trail. And so the heat didn't even faze me at all at that race, and
yeah,
I think that was probably the biggest thing at that deal.
It was really hot. I remember that. It was really hot.
Yeah.
Muggy, yeah. So as far as those rides, though, like, what if, man, you just needed to bottle those up somehow. You know what I mean? Like...
Yeah, I actually, like, after that Unadilla ride, pretty much the rest of the season, I actually had a lot of really good rides.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the rest of that season in 98. And actually kept it going pretty well until...
until you got hurt.
No, I actually stayed pretty healthy all the way into 99. Like, I didn't actually have an injury. I found out I was hypoglycemic in 99 Supercross.
Yep.
And I was struggling with that
because
I couldn't figure out why I was getting tired like I was in 10 laps. And I realized that. And that's, you know, again, you know, that'd be where those doctors and trainers and all that stuff would come in nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, just being able to keep everybody spot on. It's like, you know, if you don't put all the effort into the bike and have it spot on, how you know, it's not going to perform.
Right.
So...
Yeah,
but,
no, absolutely. So at the end of 98, did you just think it was time to move up to the class, or did Suzuki made you an offer for the factory team?
Yeah, Suzuki made me an offer, and obviously I did want to move up. I was 75 pounds on 125.
Yeah.
So, you know, I definitely was wanting to move up, and, you know, I thought it was a good move. You know, I went to the U.S. Open and won the first night there on the 250. And then I went over to, you know, Europe and won the world champion that year.
Yep.
So, you know, I was still going really strong on the big bike. And then come the first round at Anaheim, I was doing something wrong in my program because I couldn't hang on to my bike.
Like, just got tired or arm pump or just?
Just arm pump and just something was not clicking, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I remember you making some podiums though in '99.
Yeah, towards the end of the year, I actually made a couple podiums, and that's when I actually started realizing I was hypoglycemic. And once I realized that, like, it seemed like the 20 laps was easy.
Right.
So,
and
just changing up food.
Forgive me for my dearth of medical knowledge here, but what does that mean, hypoglycemic?
It's where you're, like, it's just almost the opposite of diabetic.
Oh, okay.
But whenever you have sugar, like, you get a really high spike from it, and then you crash really hard on it.
Oh, okay.
And so pretty much if you say, like, I was at, for example, I was eating Myoplex bars, and they had a lot of sugar in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I would eat, like, I don't know how many of those through the day, and the doctor just said I was just pretty much going on a roller coaster up and down and,
yeah,
you know, just wearing myself out just by doing that.
There was some way you could stop after lap 10 and eat another bar. You'd be good for the last 10.
Yeah, exactly.
What was it like at Factory Suzuki with Roger there? And Berluti was your mechanic, I believe. Did you enjoy your time there?
No, I did it. I very much so. You know, I still, you know, still today, you know, talk to Roger, you know, whenever I see him. And actually, I talk to Berluti all the time. I actually talk to him on the phone. And he's actually a really good friend of mine. And, you know, today I still probably think he was probably the best mechanic I ever had.
Oh, better than your
that
dad?
Bike, oh, yeah. That bike, I'm telling you, every time I got on that bike, it rattled exactly the same. That's how he had that thing down to a T, you know. It was just amazing that bike would feel that way every single time I got on it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, Berluti's a good dude, for sure.
Yeah, he is.
And then so after Suzuki let you go, you went the privateer route for a little while?
Yeah, I was trying to, you know, and it was in 2001, I tried to work on putting a team deal together, you know, doing some outside sponsors and stuff like that. And, you know, I just needed, better agents and better results.
Yeah, that always seems to help. Did you ever actually get arm pump surgery?
Yes, I did.
You did?
And it did not help.
Yeah, like, I remember reading that, like, or thinking that, or talking to somebody that's like, dude, RR got arm pump surgery. When he comes back, it's going to be over. Because that cursed you for years, you know, arm pump.
Yeah.
And didn't help, huh?
No, I actually got that in 2000, at the end of 2000 season. And I was like, you know, I because that's the biggest thing that helped me back, because I'm like, I never got tired, because physical wise, like, I was in awesome shape, and I just never could hang on my bike for a whole moto.
Right.
And, you know, I look back now, and what I know now, it had nothing to do with my forearms. Like, I've realized that it's all in my shoulders and stuff like that, instead of being in my forearms.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that goes leads back to knowing the doctors and stuff like that. You know, Steve, the chiropractor, Navarro.
Yeah, Steve Navarro, yeah.
Yep. He's the one that showed me that. Like, in like, a few races that he's worked on me and stuff, I have not even got a bit of arm pump. And I'm like, where were you 10 years ago, you know?
Yeah, really.
And, you know, so I think it's huge to have that kind of help, right, you know, for this sport.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, your shoulders, were they, like, rotator cuffs, reconstructed, AC joints, what was done to all of it, all the above?
pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, I was having trouble with them dislocating. And when I went to the last guy in Dallas to fix my left shoulder, he just told me that my sockets were just large, just naturally, you know, that's just the way I was born. And, you know, they ended up, what they did, it was called a Bristol procedure surgery. And it's an old procedure where they go in and they take, like, the tip of your collarbone off or something and screw it in so you have a catch. So your shoulder, you know, they can't come out. Well, I had my right one come out that one year at the U.S. Open in 99, and like, I almost, like, that was almost into my career for racing, because my arm, it messed up nerves in my shoulder.
Yeah.
So that's the only drawback. That's why they don't like to do that surgery anymore. Mm-hmm. But
God, I bet you've seen so many shoulder guys in your life, doctors.
Yes, I've seen a few.
I remember the first time I saw you with your shirt off, I got scared. I covered my eyes. You have some gnarly scars, for sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty all matching, you know. I got both knees, yeah. Both wrists, forearms, shoulders.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to match my leg one. I'm going to leave that one just one leg.
What'd you do to your leg? I don't even...
I just did the tib fib real bad, and they got compartment syndrome, so they had to open it up. Oh, so. Like
Brooks had that on his arm, too, yeah. We didn't cover the tib fib RR in the list of injuries.
Yeah.
We ran out of time.
That was, you know, I just gave you the ones up to when I was to 97. That was just those ones.
God damn, that's a lot. Yeah, that must have been just insane, all the stuff that you've done. So does it still bother you today, your injuries? Still,
obviously, you know, I'm not bad as long as I keep doing cardio and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, my body actually doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have restraints and my knees don't bend as far as they should. My shoulders don't, I can't throw overhanded and stuff like that. But, you know, I still can, you know, enjoy what I still do, you know, and ride and stuff like that. So,
you can't throw overhand,
nope,
but you can ride a motorcycle. Wow. So when you have kids, no more playing catch with dad in the back.
Yeah, I might have to do the softball pitch.
Wow. Yeah, that's I got to say, yeah, like you said, one of the things that really held you back from attaining your promise was your injuries. It had to have been frustrating at times. Had to have been, like, did you come close to throwing in the towel?
You know, I never actually, only the time, like, I never really felt like throwing in a towel and, like, just quitting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only, like, I just, at that 97 point, like, I just kind of, like, almost, I was still riding and stuff. I just wasn't putting out 100% effort, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't doing everything that I need to be doing. Mm-hmm. So, so I just kind of got down on myself with all of it. So.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Hey, did you ever... A lot of the stuff about you, you know, back then, MXA wrote a lot of crappy stuff about you. going out, looking out for the money, your dad was holding you back, et cetera, et cetera. Did you get pissed at those guys at times?
Yeah, you know, and I actually, you know, that one that came on just a while back about, you know, Mitch, you know, saying that about whoever or whatever. I don't remember what it was, and mm-hmm. you know, and Mitch, I talked to Mitch about that, and he was like, you know, I respect what you do and, you know, what you have done and everything else, and he goes, they cut and pasted what they wanted to say.
Oh, really? What, was that in a recent issue or something, Mitch? That's
it was actually, I don't know what magazine it was.
Huh.
It might have been Racer X, actually.
Oh, yeah? Oh, okay. Yeah, because like as a kid growing up in Canada, you know, MXA was my only sort of outlet to the world of motocross racing. You know what I mean? And I know that they were hard on you for sure. But so, are you happy with the way your career went? I mean, do you feel like you left something out there because of the injuries, or are you satisfied? You wake up every morning and you're perfectly fine with the way it went down. Just some bad luck.
No, you know, I definitely would have liked to win some championships for sure. You know, it's that's definitely the goal in, you know, life to succeed. And, you know, I feel like I kind of held back, you know, on that point of it. But what I, like, you know, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. You know, that's mm-hmm. the thing. You know, this is definitely what I love to do, and I don't want to do anything else. You know, yes, I'd like to go back in time and change, you know, a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's where I look at now. You know, I can try to learn from my mistakes, and, you know, the kids that I help and train, you know, maybe they can learn from my mistakes and not have those same problems.
Right.
You know, if I can do that, you know, and that's the thing, like, I still, like, working with kids and stuff, you know, I get that excitement, you know, seeing somebody that I've been working with go out and win a moto or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so,
good. Yeah.
You know, it's pretty awesome to see that and see them improve and, that's you know why I've kind of started doing this more.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, you know, I still get to ride and train.
Let me guess. So, rule number one of the Robbie Renard Motocross School is rehab your injuries.
It is very important. Like, it's just giving yourself the time and, mm-hmm. and giving yourself the time back on the bike. So when you go out there and you don't make, you know, stupid mistakes when you just get back on the bike and, you know, end up hurting yourself again.
Right, right.
You know, give yourself a little bit of time and spend some time on the bike and, you know, get fluent on that thing again. So
yeah, no, absolutely. I heard a story about, like, in 98 when you rode for Primal 125, I heard a story that your dad's motor, Suzuki didn't want your dad's motor in there or something, and you had to sneak it in the pits and put it in after night had fallen. Is that true, or is this a rumor?
No, I never had any of that problem. Yeah. You know, because, you know, like I said, Kurt Clovis is pretty much you know, the owner of the team, and, you know, he's a really good friend of mine, and, you know, like I said, I saw him a while back. It's pretty awesome, so.
All right. Well, you know, one thing about your career, like, you may not have won championships and stuff, but in bench racing, history, not that it's really worth much, you can't go to the bank and cash it, but in bench racing history, you know, your rides at Unadilla 98 and your rides at Millville 95, you know, everyone remembers that, and it's, I mean, in a way, you've got a place in motocross history. You know, maybe the place is as a teenage phenom who couldn't quite overcome injuries, but you've got a place there. People remember you. Do you feel that way?
No, yeah, I do, and I think that's great, and that's, you know, obviously it's awesome to hear that, and it does mean a lot to actually know that. That's one thing, honestly, was probably one of the hardest things for me, because me and Kevin grew up racing. Kevin's 6 months younger than me, so, you know, we grew up from peewees all the way up to the, you know, pros racing each other,
mm-hmm.
and he beat me very little in amateurs.
Did he really, huh? Yeah.
And very little. And, you know, and then when we turned pro, you know, I had the injuries, and he just started smoking me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it drove me crazy. So, but no, it's still awesome to have that.
And there's a guy that hasn't really won any championships, but has made millions and had a great career. You know, I mean, he just came along in the era of RC, but, like you said, you know, just, he just avoided injuries. Think about it. K-Dub's rarely been hurt. Rarely.
Yeah, he's had very few, and that's, you know, it's obviously the key, you know, if mm-hmm. you can, stay healthy and, keep going, you know, that's mm-hmm. huge. Yeah. You know, you got to be able to keep building yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. What about financially wise? Did you make a lot of money racing? I mean, are you able to live comfortably on what you've made? Did you put some away, or did you blow it all on, like, hookers and drugs?
you know, I stayed away from the hookers and drugs.
Okay,
for
all
sure.
Right, all right.
You know, it's you know, I didn't make as much as definitely what they make nowadays, but, you know, I definitely was, you know, lucky to make what I did. So it's and now I'm doing what I'm doing. So it's awesome. You know, still good to do this and
mm-hmm.
have fun with it.
Right. And so to recap your career, you should have gone to pro circuit. You should have rehabbed your injuries, and you should have found out you were hyperglycemic earlier.
That would have helped a little bit. You know, pretty much.
Right, right. Well, hey, right on, man. Thanks for doing this with me. I appreciate it. Always a guy I wanted to talk to and find out, and certainly, like I said, in bench racing history, you'll always be there. You know, I know that may not help your bank account or whatever, but certainly everyone remembers Robbie Renard and the rides that you put in over the years. And good luck with your schools and your track and all that. It sounds like you're having a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, I'm blessed.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Robbie. Well, thank you for coming on the BTOsports.com Transworld Motocross Podcast.
All right. Thank you.
See ya.
This has been the BTOsports.com podcast show, brought to you by Transworld Motocross. Don't forget to check out some of our past shows, including motocross legends such as...
The Beast from the East, Damon Bradshaw.
It got to the point where I didn't want to leave home, and once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. If I wasn't going to give 100%, I'm not going to take their money.
The working class hero, Doug Henry.
It was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, you know, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that, you know, that I was going to miss.
The Dogger, Ron Machine.
Until you really open your ears and you want to listen to what they're saying, it's like beating a dead horse. And, you know, and I know from personal experience, did anybody ever sit me down? Of course, everybody did.
Pro Circuits, Mitch Payton.
There's two ways to make the money. One is you can sign for money, or two, you can earn the money. I'm a high believer in earning the money. I think they ride better when they earn the money.
Seven-time Jeremy McGrath.
I was so mad, like so disappointed and so frustrated that I pulled fifth and I left. Every point counts. I could kick myself to this day for not just riding around in tents. It's been no problem. My ego got in the way, you know?
The O Show, Johnny O'Mara.
Stuff that you sit there if you didn't even want to ride it, you just wanted to just look at it all day. I mean, I got a chance to test all that. I like that era I was in. I really do.
Search Mathis on the iTunes Store to find these and many more great podcasts. I won't let this die. You know I've got this bad opinion.